Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hey everybody, thanks for watching this episode. I'm on the road a little bit. Listen, we got a bunch of clubs we're about to announce soon. We're getting a poster together with it. We're getting all the dates. I'm going to be building a new hour in these clubs all summer, July, August, September, November. It's going to be a hell of a time. But right now, if you want to see this hour before we film it for Netflix, June 1st and June 2nd, Comedy Key West. In Key West, Florida, one of the best venues to have fun in Key West of comedy. It's a blast. I'm looking forward to it. It's a Monday, Tuesday, June 1st, June 2nd, Comedy Key West, dansoder.com for those tickets. And then June 5th, I'm going to be at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. I'm bringing Sam Evans and Greg Stone. Going to have a hell of a time. Dansoder.com for those tickets as well. And then in Mill Valley, we'll see you at the Throckmorton, June 13th. We're looking at trying to open up some more tickets once we find out our camera setup. So stay tuned for that. But dansoder.com for all the dates. We got all the dates up there, and we'll be announcing a ton of club dates soon all together. Also, if you're in Montreal, I'll see you July 25th for Just for Laughs. I'll be at Club Soda doing a headlining show. Dansoder.com. Thank you guys for watching the podcast. Hope you're having a decent week. The part about New York City apartments that people don't understand is it's not like if that would have happened in the suburbs, you would just go, is this your house? And you go up and yeah, go, well, he lives yeah, next door. Yeah. But New York City, you're like, hey, I'm in the meat market. The meat refrigerator of a market. Is this your apartment? And you go, no. And then you check. Completely, I gave you the completely wrong address. That's fucking.
It wasn't of the numbers to have wrong. It was a decent one.
It was one
block away.
Yeah. If it would have been the first number, it probably would have really fucked some shit up. Yeah. But also, I feel like it's unfair for you as a person that enjoys drugs that in that moment, I was like, how many people in that moment go, well, he's probably on drugs.
Not realizing the drug he is.
And it was my fault.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm on drugs too, but weed's not even a drug.
I get asked to do so many psychedelic events, and I'm like, let me guess, well-meaning, terribly organized, and this is going to be a nightmare.
For those of you that don't know Shane Moss, go watch Shane Moss. He is one of, he's just a fucking fantastic stand-up comedian. And the thing that I love about it is, I remember watching you when we were booze buddies,
yeah,
and we'd go do stand-up. The thing that's great is you had this whole evolution and did, you know, experiences with DMT and all these. He's got a special out right now called First Dose. The second dose is coming out April 13th. I think this might come out after that. So go watch it. It's great. I watched half of the first one, and I love the entire idea of you explaining drug trips, but through jokes.
Yeah.
A lot of times people do this shit, and they just talk.
Yeah.
But you're still that's what I said when I told Katie when I watched it. I go, it's awesome to watch you do material about drugs and you're still Shane Moss.
Yeah.
You're still like writing great bits.
I transitioned from doing regular stand up to doing science themed shows.
Sure.
And then I just.
What made you want to do that? You just were bored with stand up?
Honestly, I remember I got my Comedy Central Presents in like. 2009. And that was like my dream at the time. I remember when I started comedy, I was like, if I just had a Comedy Central Presents in like 5 years, boy, then I'd really be on something. And that was like an unrealistic expectation, but I did it. And I remembered I like had this party in this bar and friends and family around and stuff. And I just remember going, and like killed it, loved the taping. And then I was like, I'm not happy.
Like this really? Was it at the after party?
It was after that. And then I wrote an hour to like do an hour. And I was like, boy, I just don't care about this. And
what changed? Because I think like Well, the thing about joke writing that's interesting is it's figuring out a puzzle a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Where I have this idea, but how do I make this idea do this thing of making people laugh?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of the joy in joke writing is figuring it out. But when you did the new hour, were you just like, whatever?
It was like a lot of drinking and dick jokes and stuff. And yeah. I was like, ah. And then I was doing, you know, I was doing international shows where they're doing these themed shows.
Which
I was like a late night comic. And I was like, well, what would my theme be? And I was always just reading science books. And I never put the two together that I could put science in my act. And then anyone that ever tries to do science jokes, it's always like late nighty, like you read a headline and then have a snarky
response.
Yeah.
Where they're like, Mars might not be as far as they go. Mars isn't as far as my ex-wife's fucking field. Yeah.
Lame. Exactly. And I was like, I care about ideas. Like I like to eat mushrooms and watch David Attenborough documentaries and stuff.
Who doesn't?
And that was literally what I was doing. And I had all these questions. I was just like in a funk and I just started writing scientists.
Yeah.
And then they like wrote back. And I was like, so weird that they're writing me back.
But I feel like out of celebrities, scientists are the most to write you back.
Yeah.
Because they're not.
Oh, well, they're not celebrities.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. Even if they are
like
world-renowned physicists.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not getting pussy thrown at them when they walk out of the lab.
Oh,
they're not like, you were figuring out gravity on Saturn. Can I suck your dick in your Jaguar? They're taking a Honda back to a very like...
No, there's not like ladies apartment. Lining up to like to blow the roadie to get backstage in the lab.
I would enjoy celebrity so much more if it was for intelligent people providing information.
And that's my whole thing. Then I like went to all these labs. I started this Here We Our podcast where each week when I was touring, I'd go to a different university and talk to them a lot about how the mind works and perception stuff.
Sure.
And I'd be talking with these people and I'd be like, oh my God, like 200 people on earth have like read this paper that you wrote. They're all in your field.
Yeah.
And no one in the public would be hearing this at all if it weren't for my like minuscule amount of listeners listening to this.
Are you going and digging it up?
And it blew my mind. And so I started putting together, like I had a Netflix special called Mating Season that was like a bunch of animal mating behavior and as it relates to relationships. Then I put out an album and it was fine. But then I put out an album. I'd broken my feet and put out an album.
I remember that. You did the bonfire. You had had a bad DMT experience and broke both your feet.
Then
you were on the you were healed by the time you came on the bonfire.
Yeah,
but it was fun because that was the first I saw of this version of you.
Because
I knew Shane clean cut from Wisconsin by way of Boston. Was it Minnesota or Wisconsin? You grew up in Wisconsin. By way of Boston.
Yeah.
And you were always like, ask my buddy Shane, you're going to come in. It looks like a lacrosse player. And then you showed up at the bonfire and Big J was like, who's that? I was like, this is Shane. We're just going to find out this is new Shane. You were telling us about how you broke your feet. Both your feet at the same time from jumping.
Broke my feet. I've broken my mind, my bank accounts.
But can I tell you something that makes me feel really good of seeing you this time? The last time I saw you on the bonfire, you were coming out of breaking your mind. And you were kind of piecing it together. And watching your shit last night, I was like, oh, he's back. Your mind is back.
Yeah.
Especially with the, again,
that
go
was like
watch.
10 years ago. And it did take a while.
Yeah. But go watch First Dose. Because what I do love about it is, you had fucking jokes, dude. I was telling Katie, you were the first person I ever saw do Conan live. Joe List got me a ticket. Yeah. Joe, I was drunk in Central Park because my restaurant won our softball league. And Joe List was like, Shane Moss is taping his Conan. Do you want to go to it? And I had met you once or twice. And I was like, yes. What do I have to do? He's like, you have to get to 30 Rock right now. And I was in my softball shirt, my fucking shorts, my like basketball shoes and a hat, and I was drunk. And I remember going to 30 Rock and finding my way, and I sat behind the Max Kellerman at 7. Behind you, I watched you, and I had seen your stand up, but it was the first late night saw. But you were so tight.
Yeah.
You were so like boom, boom, boom. And then to watch your special last night, I'm like, man, that motherfucker still writes a joke. And I love that. That's my favorite thing is to be like, you still got that snap on that fastball.
Yeah. I go back and forth because some of my themed shows that I do are definitely heading in the direction of like a TED Talk-y type thing, because it's bigger ideas. And I also realized with doing science jokes, like if it takes so long to set up a concept, then to have like one or two punchlines, like the laughs per minute aren't there.
Yeah.
So you really have to like make a theme so that it pays off. So you take kind of the hit in the beginning and then it pays off. Like the people that, I mean, it is hard to do. Like I just watched Maria Bamford's Old Baby and like I was like, I didn't realize the first time because I think I was just enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
But I was paying attention to the laughs per minute that she had. It's and like a meaningful, like themed thing. And like, I'm not there, but I that's something to aspire to.
For her, when people go, I don't like Maria Bamford, it's like when someone doesn't like a $400 bottle of wine, where you go, I don't even think you know what you're into. Yeah, I don't think you realize this is some of the best of the best.
Yeah, yeah.
She has done stuff that I've listened to. I like listening to her albums while I drive, because for some reason, just listening to it helps me with my, it's like almost like reading a book
where you picture
it better.
Yeah.
Where when I listen to Maria Bamford, I can like hear all the places she goes, where I think when I watch, I get distracted by lighting or the curtain or how she's standing. Yeah. So I love listening to her albums. And one that I always listen to and I have for years is Unwanted Thought Syndrome, because you start seeing the like beginning of her going into the deeper stuff, but she like just puts her foot in it.
Yeah.
But the laughs per minute are still.
Yeah. I mean, you can go to her site and find these treasure troves of all these like weird like web series things and stuff that she's
Lady
done.
Lady Dynamite was like, was born out of all of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like she was like, she's incredible. I love people that do that. You know, I always really respected what Ari Shaffir did with storytelling.
Yeah.
Because he would be like, yeah, you got a long story, but you can punch it up. And then when I did his This Is Not Happening, I worked on this story about getting robbed when I lived with a drug dealer. And I remember trying it, and you have that feeling where you go, I've really bummed out the room.
The
room is like, oh my God. They're like, I don't want to laugh right now. You have a gun on your head. And you're like, oh yeah, but it's going to get fun. And like to learn how to put that shit in to kind of like make it palpable for like, or digestible as comedy.
Well, that was also like, I was part of the reason why I was so like tight and dry and everything was I was like a very shy, introverted person.
Sure.
When I was young. And so it was like a way of having like very tight control over exactly every, it's funny when people are like, it's weird an introvert would get into comedy. It's like, oh, we like one-sided conversations.
I always thought it was funny when people are like, you talk to yourself, and I'm like, how do you not? How do you work out voices?
Don't talk to themselves.
It's crazy. When people think I'm crazy for talking to myself, it's like, so when you drop something on the ground, you just breathe through your nose? You just go, you don't go, you idiot. You fucking dropped. You, like even that little bit of.
I think people have, I think there's a spectrum of how much inner monologue we have, and some people have.
I've heard that people
don't have any at all.
That's what I've heard.
So
that's very interesting to me, to just not have a voice going, what the fuck is that?
So get this, my special, we call them trips. Then it's like the first dose and the second dose. Sure. I'm doing the third dose live. No, I'm stuck in this fucking.
Where you were talking about the first hit made the universe crumble on itself. And then the next one, you're like, my whole life went. Dude, I wouldn't be able to handle that.
But I part of the reason, because I did a psychedelic tour back, that's what we talked about on the bonfire, and then I set that aside and started doing other things. But then this opportunity, one of the first things that came up after COVID was this opportunity to do a Vegas residency with like visuals and everything, add all these artists and whatnot,
which is really fucking cool.
And it was a fun thing to get to work on. It took a really long time. We kind of have it down now, but my VJ, Michael Strauss, who blends things and together in real time. So I'm not locked into a script, so I can go off and he can.
So basically almost like lighting cues but with visual art.
Yeah, so where
you can go, oh, you're going over here, let me, instead of turn the lighting over here, I can like make it blend behind him.
In the same way a DJ can alter things based on the vibe, he can throw in, he has like 25 years worth of visuals. So like, say a service dog is in the show and starts barking, he might start putting up dog visuals or something.
And that would make
moment.
My dog bark way more. Yeah. My dog would be like, there's dogs all over here. I gotta go fucking crazy. I mean, with the stuff like, you know, the reference to DMT where you're like, you learn all the whole universe. You said this in the trailer for Second Dose.
Yeah.
And then it's like all the stuff behind you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, and it's just forgotten. Is that kind of visuals planned, or is that
a lot of it is like, yeah. So a lot of the bits we have like a set. These are the visuals that I'll put when he launches into this bit, but what order I do the bits, and then if I improvise, he'll improvise as well.
Damn, you gotta be, he's gotta be on it.
He's been doing it for 25 years. He was one of the first, he started doing, his first VJ set was cutting VHS tapes together and put it together with scotch tape and having multiple players with multiple projectors going on and stuff 25 years ago. And so anyway, I saw him at a conference providing visuals for talks, and I was like, this is the guy, I know he can do this. And we started working on it, and then right before launching the Vegas residency, we were in the backyard in Vegas, and he had this projector set up, and he was playing visuals and stuff, and we were on this research chemical 2CB and doing like a little nitrous and stuff and watching visuals. How we put together.
That's so funny. That's how you do your tasting. You know, do we have any experimental chemicals? Great. Now throw up those flares. Perfect.
And I was trying to describe, I forget what it was, but I was like, you know that one part during this one aspect where it will look like this in like your mind's eye or whatever, I thought it was universal, and he's like, oh, I don't see anything. I have aphantasia. And I'm like, what? Have you ever heard of aphantasia? So aphantasia is, this is what brought it up, it's when you don't see any visuals in your mind's eye at all. So he only sees them when he's on psychedelics, which is why he's so attracted to this and seeing these
visuals. So normally he can't think of it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If he's on psychedelics, it'll be in his face.
So like what we were saying about the inner monologue, people have that with their visual system where it's on a spectrum. So if you say like, picture an apple. Some people would see like a black and white apple, some people a two-dimensional apple, a cartoon apple, and then like a better cartoon apple, and then a vivid apple. And I see an apple like almost takes over my vision.
Yeah.
You know, depending on how much you concentrate.
When you said that to me, I have a very clear picture of like a water-dusted apple.
Yeah.
You know, like where you see at the grocery store with the little flicks of water on it. Like the round thing like that.
See, so you're on the higher end of it then. So you're more like hyperphantasia. I think a lot of comics.
Hyperphantasia is absolutely going to be my screen name. Hyperphantasia is 100% my screen name.
If you start a band.
Yeah. As you grow up, you realize there's things you need. You know, a house, a family, that stuff. But if you have those things, you're also going to realize you need life insurance. And if you need to find out how to get life insurance, use Ethos. Ethos will tell you what kind of policy you need, what it can cover. It makes getting the life insurance fast and easy. It's 100% online. You get a quote in seconds, apply in minutes, and get same day coverage. That's huge, because then you're like, oh, I have life insurance. You can get up to $3 million in coverage. Some policies are as low as $30 a month. So take 10 minutes to get covered today with life insurance through Ethos. Get your free quote at ethos.com/soder. That's ethos.com/soder. Application times may vary. Rates may vary. ZocDoc, gotta learn that noise means it's ZocDoc. If you are nervous about going and seeing a doctor, or maybe you're like frustrated by it and you're just like, I don't know, man, how the hell do I go see a doctor? Well, try ZocDoc. I've been using it for years as an app and as a website. It's a free app and website that helps you find and book high quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love. If you want to see a doctor in person, great. You want a video visit? Great, you can do that. You can view thousands of verified patient reviews to give you a real sense of who your doctor is. Maybe they hate small talk and just, you know, just want to get to it. That's what I like. I like a very straightforward doctor. Here's what's going on. So when you're ready, you can see their real-time availability and click to book instantly. No phone tag, no waiting around. So stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message.
So I found this out. I'm on drugs and I'm about to start the show, and I'm like, oh my God, my visuals guy is blind in the head.
But he's almost like, you know what's funny about that is he's like the blind guitar player from Roadhouse, yeah, where he just like fucking wails. Like he can wail on your visuals because he doesn't see it, because he has this like other thing of, it's almost like, you know, when they like, I can't smell. I lost it during COVID. It's just completely gone.
Oh, you haven't regained it?
No, I haven't regained it.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
Does it affect your taste?
Yeah, it dulls it. Like a lot of hot sauce, a lot of ranch. I need stuff that actually like steps on my tongue for me to like really feel it. But I was telling Katie, there's like moments where I'll get like, now that the seasons are changing, I don't know if it's like a memory smell or whatever, but it's starting to be like, I'll walk and I'll get like, kind of what you were talking about how I have like on the higher end, I can picture an apple. To me, it's like, I just see the edges. It was similar to like when I've seen documentaries where people talk about their sight returning, where it's all of a sudden it's like so big, you can't see stuff, but you can see the outlines of it.
Yeah.
That's been happening recently with my smell. Where I go, I can like take in the overall, but I can't smell specific what it is. But I go like, that's a season change. That's like a spring. It was when it got really hot outside. And I walked out, I was like, oh, I like wouldn't say I smelled, but I would say that I took something in through my nose that made me remember stuff. And that was always what smell was to me.
There's an interesting thing. I think it's called Charles Bonnet syndrome. I'm probably off on that, but Oliver Sacks writes about it in his book, The Mind's Eye, I think. Great neuroscientist. The movie that Robin Williams about Parkinson's. Awakening.
Awakenings.
Yeah. He played Oliver Sacks in that movie.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so he had this thing about people that go blind in life, like they weren't born blind. They'll often have these visual hallucinations because what happens is when a part of the brain kind of goes dormant, it's not receiving stimulation in the way that when you park a car, you want to fire up the engine every few months to make sure stuff. So the brain does a similar thing.
Really?
And so maybe. So I wonder
if that was my brain going, oh, the season's changing. What did that used to smell like?
It might be something like that.
I don't know, but there are exercises and I just haven't sat down and done them where they really are like, sit there with like I think it's something like a nail polish. It goes in order of like very, very hard and potent to like very soft, and then you're supposed to like do the smells and go down and then try to repeat up to teach your brain how to take it in. It's like relearning how to smell.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Have you
I also heard if I take GLP-1s, those things that they've been restoring people's smells.
Not to be a cliche, but have you had a psychedelic experience since this has happened?
I haven't.
I'm
due for it.
I'm actually a bit of a skeptic for someone that does as many psychedelics as I do. Is the psychedelic community, they're like, everything's psychedelics. Yeah, it's going to heal everything. But there is, it does, certainly psychedelics create a lot of new connections that it at least temporarily. And I always, because like my bad foot that has some like nerve damage and from the surgeries.
Sure.
They just, you know, cut into so many tendons and everything that it's like half of the foot's like sort of numb. It's not a big deal. Like I'm going rock climbing later today and stuff. And so but I sometimes have a little bit of a limp and everything. And sometimes when it's worse, it can, I've noticed when I've had an experience that there's like a little bit of a reset. Like it goes back to like feeling like a normal foot for a while.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done mushrooms since 2019. So I'm due for a big one. And I think I'm going to, I'm going to probably wait till the tour's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once the hour's taped and safely done.
That's a good idea.
Because I don't want to crack open and go, well, I don't like that whole middle chunk.
Oh, my God. People always ask me if I trip on stage, like during the show. Sure. It was always when I started doing psychedelic shows 11 years ago. I had to have a question, a Q&A in the show description of common questions. Like, should I come on drugs? I'm like, it's really meant to simulate a trip more than like be on psychedelics and things like that. But one of the common questions is, are you going to be on drugs while performing? And like, I just don't know why that would be entertaining for people. But I mean, it's fun when you hear like, whoa, this band during Woodstock was on 20 hits of acid or whatever. Yeah. But I wouldn't want to see a band more if they're like, we're going to dose tonight. Yeah. I'd be like,
is it going to be tight? I don't know if the music's going to be tight. Well, there is the times I've done Ari's storytelling show in Montreal on mushrooms. And
what was that like?
Good until it wasn't.
Good
until it wasn't. He was like, everyone on the lineup, it was at Montreal. He's like, everyone on the lineup's going to do mushrooms. And I was there first because I think it was like one of my first years doing Montreal. So I ate 2.5 grams and then I hung out.
Okay. Yeah, that's not crazy.
Not crazy. And yeah. I knew it wasn't going to be crazy. Yeah, I could handle under 3 pretty well. Yeah. But it launched me for a little bit. Yeah, and I was like, all right. And then I remember smoking a joint upstairs in that, it was at Cleopatra's, that like strip club.
Yeah.
And then Ari comes into the room and he goes, bad news. You and I are the only two that did mushrooms. No one else wants to do them. And I was like, what? And then he's like, and the show's starting. And I was like, all right. And he goes, but you're on mushrooms. Do you want to go first? And I went, yes. I want this over with right now, which is the worst headspace to be in when you're about to have a fucking 6 or 7 hour trip.
Yeah.
And then I went on stage and it was going well because I was telling about this story about doing mushrooms in high school, and I took them before my friend and he had to drive my car. So we're like talking about, it's almost like, can we get away from the cops? And I'm like, I'm doing a good job. Laughs per minute.
Yeah.
Making it funny.
Yeah.
And then one of the lights on the stairs went off and it went up. And then my whole entire attention was like, was that real? And people are like, was what real? Because no one saw it. It was one of the lights from under the stair, so you don't trip. And I went, that light, did that go off? Yeah. And then it was, unraveled. Right. And by the end, I went, anyways, the cops pulled us over. I didn't even have like a punchline for this. And then I left and walked around Montreal by myself I remember I had an iPod at the time. It was before iPhones.
Yeah.
So no, it must've been like, I had an Android, so it must've been like 2013, and I remember like putting my iPod on and being like, I'm just gonna walk around and listen.
Yeah, what you want to do.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, of course.
I remember listening to Phil Collins outside of a French church in Montreal and being like, one more night. I was like, this is incredible. I had a great time. But performing, no thanks.
That was my experience. Every time I performed, I was like, I want to be looking at trees right now. Like, it's not like it really hurt the performance too much, but it was like, I was just on autopilot. And then I'm like zoomed out. I'm having like an out of body experience watching the stupid thing that I do for my life.
Yeah, that's when you really realize. You go, we're all organisms and I'm a dumb one. Yeah, what am I doing? I'm just talking for a living. This is so stupid. There was, do you go to shows? Like music.
I'll go to like I went to this it's called Pretty Lights Fest. It's like a kind of like an EDM fish thing where
that
it's
makes
like
2 days. That seems like a place to trip. I saw I did Truffles in Amsterdam and I went and saw Pearl Jam, and that was the last time I want to trip inside.
Felt mushrooms are pretty intense, too. I like to be kind of by myself and being able to control the environment.
I had to text while I was on it.
Yeah.
What an unpleasant experience.
Yeah.
Looking at your phone and realizing what a phone is when you're on mushrooms.
Oh, the last time I was on LSD, I was like trying to read and it looks like Sanskrit.
I was texting Lou from the bonfire. I was like, in the back of arena tripping hard. And then he came to the back and I was like, ah! And he's like, damn, you really are going through it. The thing of truffles that I didn't understand, the difference between them and American mushrooms, was that it hits a lot harder. The visuals are a lot more. Mm-hmm. And it burns cleaner. Mm-hmm. You like go up, but you go down. It's like quick to rise, quick to fall.
Yeah, yeah.
Because by the end of the Pearl Jam concert, we stopped by a cafe to get a joint. My like friends wanted a beer or whatever, and I wanted like a spliff. I wanted some tobacco mixed with some weed.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, I'm pretty normal again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I went to bed that night in our hotel room, not...
Yeah.
I didn't feel like... a lot of times when I do mushrooms, I feel like at night and the next morning, the shell is coming back together. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm shelling back up, like, getting a harder... Like, letting all the thoughts out. But this, I was, like, immediately, like, oh, I'm ready to go to bed.
That's why on tour... Like, when I do these big psychedelic tours, it's the least amount of psychedelics that I do. You know, when I'm not on tour, I'll trip and, like, try to write about it and articulate the experiences. Sure. So I have something to talk about when I'm touring. But when you're on tour, yeah, so especially the older you get, the more you realize, like, no, I want a few days afterwards to think about some of what happened. And
yeah, I'm really interested to do a trip, you know? I think it might really, just even if it's like less than 3 grams of mushrooms, just to be back again and just to get launched and go like, oh yeah, we're just, yeah, we're all just an organism on this rock.
It's, there's so many different, it's changing so much because of the decriminalization of, yeah, of things that you can get kind of specifically what you want. Like 2CB is this research chemical that's especially good for something like a concert because it's just, it's mushroom visuals and MDMA like body and feel, but no head trip. Like you're clear headed.
What? That's crazy. That would be, both Pip and I are looking at each other like, that would be fucking fantastic. Yeah. That does feel like, at least we're at that part of science where you go, we can make some fuck cool trips.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was this guy, Alexander Shulgin, Sasha Shulgin. He was a chemist in the 50s, one of the legends in the field. He made a fortune making some fertilizer for Dow Chemical, and they're like, here's your own lab, just do whatever you want. And he had an influential mescaline experience, and he started tweaking the mescaline molecule, and he tried testing on animals and wasn't noticing anything. And he's like,
meanwhile, those raccoons are just tripping their dicks off. They're like, yeah, dude, I won't dig through any trash. Holy shit, man. Holy shit, my legs grew out. And then my hands grew out. And then I understood why I have fingers. Like a raccoon being tested on with its fingers. It's like, what is fucking happening?
Yeah, but you can't see from the outside.
Man, it's to like, be a lab rat for that versus like, you know what I mean?
Getting tumors put in, yeah, you or whatever.
Go, oh, we're going to hit this one with radiation. You go, no, but this one you're like, brother, can I get a cigarette? That was unbelievable. So he got this whole... is like lab to himself,
and he was like, we need to test it on humans, but it would be unethical because even with the best chemistry and neuroscience, you have no idea like what this new thing is, yeah, going to do or what is the right dosage. And so he decided the only ethical thing to do was to test it on himself. Hero.
Listen, this goes back to my thing that I'm preaching on several podcasts across the... Anytime I can get on a mic, I'm going to preach it. I've been shorthand terming it, calling it Dan's Law, but I think we should, where I believe that if you own a company, you need to work there. So to me, this falls right in line. Yeah, if you're a scientist... Yeah. Better try it on yourself first. Yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not going to, like, you can't be a board member of Dow and go, I like this chemical. You go, no, I need the motherfucker in the lab that's like, boop, all right, here I go. Yeah. That's what I want. Accountability, baby.
Yeah, and he took a lot for the team because he made over 1,000 chemicals, a new psychedelics, and he liked 1 out of 5.
Whoa! Which meant 4 times it was tough. 4 times he went, no. But that one time he had to go. That was pretty crazy. That was pretty crazy. Especially in the 50s where like people were sleeping in suits. Like you had to like wear a suit to go to bed. That's how dressed up they were and like pinned up, being like, brother, I launched myself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is in Oakland, so people were like a little looser.
Shout out.
And
it's where the Soder family immigrated to. Shout out to East Bay.
And he, if he liked it, he would give it to his wife, Anne.
Cool.
And then if she liked it, then they would invite friends over for a weekend.
That's the invite.
And they had these like Good Friday experiments. And then they would all do this brand new psychedelic that they had never, that he had just concocted for the first time. And then they would write a paper about it and publish it. He did get let go from Dow.
Too fun. We're letting you go for being too fun. What is it specifically about the Bay Area that there's so much psychedelic influence? And because you had Ken Kesey, right?
Yeah.
Then you got this scientist, and you have the Merry Pranksters. You have Hunter S. Thompson giving the Angels LSD.
I don't know.
Ashbery, the Grateful Dead.
Right.
You just wonder if it's like, what is it about the Bay Area that just lends itself so much to psychedelics?
Yeah, I mean, there's good weather, first of all.
Yeah, well, it's great. It is. It's always a little foggy, and then it gets a little warm, and then it goes back to being cold. It's never oppressive in any way, whether with cold or with heat.
Well, then there's a fair amount of intellectuals around, but it's always been like this alternative.
There's also blue-collar people. San Francisco at its best is mixed.
Mm-hmm.
At its worst, it's all tech people driving people out. But my aunt grew up, my dad's from Oakland and my aunt was born in Oakland and they all grew up in the East Bay. But my aunt became a drug addict later in life, but did a lot of psychedelics in the 60s.
Yeah.
Because she was just a teenager and it was around. And she
now
was
people
like,
use psychedelics to quit addictions.
Hers was on the way up, but she told me a story. She had a big fear of little people. She had like a very, very big fear of little people that I thought was so funny. I was close to her and I used to like go stay with her. It's my dad's sister. This is after my dad's dead. So I had a really good relationship with her and she was very, very funny. She's a big lady, former drug addict. She'd tell it like it is. But oh man, I'll tell you right now, my biggest regret was in middle school signing up for French and not Spanish because boy, I don't use French, and I could really use some Spanish right about now. But thank God for Babbel. You can do real learning with real results. You want to learn a new language? Probably not about memorizing grammar tables or topping a leaderboard. It's because Babbel wants you to speak it out in the real world with real people. Babbel gets you there fast. Learning a language with Babbel is all about small steps, big wins, and progress that you can actually feel. Their bite-sized lessons fit easily into your daily routine, and also, just 10 minutes a day is enough to start seeing real results. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/soder. That's getting up to 60% off at babbel.com/soder. Spelled BABBEL.com/soder. Rules and restrictions may apply. It's all about the money. Stop overpaying for wireless just because, that's always been what my bill's been, so I should just keep paying it. No, Mint Mobile. They're here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and an unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for $15 a month. If you like your money, Mint Mobile's for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/soder. That's mintmobile.com/soder. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan required. New customer offer for 3 months only. Then full price plan available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Huge fear of little people, like to the point where they would come on TV.
Meanwhile, you're a wrestling fan and stuff.
And they're all over the place. She's watching Doink with all the little clowns. But I remember specifically us watching Austin Powers Spy Who Shagged Me and Mini Me. She was like, no, like not even. I mean, I was laughing, but like she was like, no, I'm not playing. I don't fuck with that shit. I can't do that. And then finally, when I was older, she told me the story of her and her friend took 20 hits of acid in downtown San Francisco and were walking around and they went into a giant hotel. I think it was like a Marriott downtown. And they went up to the banquet hall and it opened up and it was a little person convention. Oh. And she was like 16 years old and like tripping, and they were all like talking to her and like grabbing her arms, and she was like, no, no, no. And it just fucked her up. Fucked her up until the day she died. Like, she would not fuck with little people in any way. Like, and I was like, what are you talking about? They're small. What are you? You're big. What are you worried about? She's like, she called me Danny. She goes, Danny, I don't fuck with that. I don't want to fuck with that. And I always remember that. And then when she told me that story, I was like, well, yeah, you were tripping.
Yeah.
And then an elevator opened up, and everyone was half the size. Yeah. You were Gulliver and Gulliver's Travels. Yeah, yeah. Of course you were freaked out. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, I don't know. But is that like, I don't know. I think of her when I think of psychedelics in the Bay Area, because she would be like, because my grandmother had her committed when she was a teenager for doing acid. She did acid. She got in trouble and she did acid alone in her room. And she came out and was like watching TV with my grandma. And she was like, whoa, she, you got snakes in your hair. And my grandma was like, what? And she was like laughing. She's like, you got snakes in your hair. This shit's wild. And my grandmother's from Oklahoma. It's like a button up conservative was like, oh, my daughter lost her mind.
Yeah.
And I think Aunt Karen told me she did like 15 or 16 hits of acid. So she was up there for a while.
Yeah.
If they drove her to the mental institution. And then like a day later, she called and she was like, nah, I was on drugs. Please come get me. This is crazy. And I was like, damn, that's what it was like in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the regular community didn't understand what psychedelics were.
Yeah.
They're like, what do you mean you're taking acid? What is acid?
Now it's like...
No, I think it was like, yeah, late 60s. She was born in 50, so it must have been like 68 to like 73.
Now there's like frat houses doing mushrooms like instead of having kegs and stuff. Crazy. And there's like the, oh, you're like the mega mushroom person. And you're the
which doesn't feel like it connects on any level. How are you taking that and not looking at Trump with his bronzer on his face and not being like... Yo, this is fucking me up. To think you take any sort of mushroom and look at a politician, like any politician,
and go, yeah.
They are the peak of phoniness.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, I couldn't imagine watching a campaign speech and take blue or red out of it, but watching someone being like, and I'm going to do this, and being on mushrooms and being like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, that is crazy. Do you take any offense to the microdose culture?
I don't take offense. I think it's like oversold. I get that. It's funny. The word psychedelic, it's like Latin for mind manifesting. These are considered the most mind altering substances on earth. And that's why people had historically done them. Some people are like, oh yeah, I want to take the most mind altering substance on earth, but just enough so it doesn't alter my mind in any way whatsoever.
Can you, I don't want to do the thing, but I want to take the thing.
Yeah.
You know, what's funny about that is we're both former drinkers, heavy drinkers.
Yeah.
And that is always kind of how I felt about people who drink NA beers that don't have problems.
Yeah.
Because you go, well, I need it to crutch an urge.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I needed to overcome my disdain for the taste of beer to get the drunk enough.
But for me now, it is like a crutch.
Yeah.
Like if I'm at a baseball game, I have the urge to want to drink 20 beers.
Right.
But if I find a Heineken Zero, I go, oh, and I take a couple sips. I go, that's fine. But I couldn't understand if I didn't have a drinking problem being like, give me the beer with none of the good stuff.
Yeah.
I'd be like, no, the why NAs work is because you have one or two and you go, no warmth.
Yeah.
There's no like,
right.
The feeling of when you drink and you have a couple and you're like, I'm starting to fucking feel it. NAs don't have that. So you have two and you go, I'm just drinking bubble water.
Yeah.
And it's making my gut feel heavy.
Yeah, the whole cliche with the microdosing and the tech culture, I don't know. I was commissioned to, there's this show, Surviving AI. People ask me to put together some comedy on various science concepts, sure. And I don't know a thing about AI, but I was trying to put together some material. And it's this variety show. There's like a scientist, a tech person, a musician, and it's at this Frontier Towers in San Francisco. It's like this futurist thing. Each level is like I think Ethereum has a level, and then there's an AI level. There's a like a longevity level that sure. I saw like Brian Johnson's poster.
Come on. wet skinned old dudes. They're like, I'm gonna live forever. And you're like, oh, you creep me out, bro. You look like you just got.
Do you know what forever is?
Yeah, you go, I don't think. I don't want you to live forever. You stink. Have someone cool.
You're not even like, I'm gonna live for a million years.
Yeah, do you remember
because
my old.
Sounds ridiculous.
My old Japanese neighbor Albert in Tucson was cool. Why can't he live forever? You bring me tea when I was hungover. You're a dickhead. I don't want you living forever.
And I went and there was I wanted to get a water and there was a vending machine and it was an AI vending machine.
I would love because I used to love beating the shit out of vending machines when it took my money.
AI,
I'm glad it's going to be feeling something.
Yeah. It's like four times as wide as a regular vending machine. You know when airports try to be like, look at how fancy this vending machine is. It's like an adult claw machine
and
or something.
And then it never works.
It never works.
SFO, if you go to the Delta, I think it's Terminal 2, there is a vending machine with one of the claws that grab stuff and they have canned Gatorade.
Yeah.
I love canned Gatorade. It reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah.
When I'm at SFO, I'm like, maybe the machine will work this time. And I can go get a can of orange Gatorade before I get on my phone. It never is working. You put money in and it goes and it just doesn't. And you go, I'd rather just have an old one that had the swirls. That would just drop it.
Vending machines are pretty solid.
We've got the tech. We don't need you to put AI into the vending machine.
And this had two screens on each side and then a glass window so you could see like a third of the stuff that was in there. And then it has like this AI lady on it that you're supposed to be able to talk to her or whatever. It's new. She's not quite working yet. Yeah. You can't quite talk to her yet, of course. And then, and so now I got to use the screen to find a drop down menu. And there's no just like A8 or something like that.
Just give me a fucking number, a letter and a number.
So I need to go like drink soda water. And then I look and there's things in there that I can't find on the menu because the menu is not all together yet. And I'm like, all right, here's snacks, fine bag of chips. And then I order another thing and it goes in to get the soda water.
It turns into a person. It walks down the hallway and pours you a soda water. You're like, just drop it out your asshole. You're a vending machine. Just go, bruh, here's a soda. Bruh.
It opens up like the Star Trek, like that they got food out of or whatever. And then I grab the drink out and it knows my hand was in there and the thing's been, and then it closes and goes and retrieves. And then it does the classic thing where the bag of chips comes halfway.
No way. That's
like even one thing to fix on vending machines.
The only thing to fix. Stop letting it get stuck against the window where it's like, that's so funny.
And theoretically, like, wouldn't you think an AI vending machine has all these sensors, it's doing its own inventory and ordering and restocking itself and stuff, and it doesn't even know that it has, and I'm trying to go on the screen to like ask for help. That's not an option. The AI lady has an Instagram.
No, she doesn't.
She does too, that I can go on and message this fucking.
But you can't just, and then if you hit it would be a hate crime. If you like shook it, like exactly. An old one, they'd go, please don't do that. I've asked you not to put your hands on me.
Yeah, well, instead you're like, oh, she's doing the best she can.
Oh my God, should follow her. I should follow her on Instagram. Really see if they update the chip selection.
I'm really hoping for her. Oh my God. I hope she gets her stuff together.
You're the girl you're dating. He's like, who is that? And you go, that's an AI vending machine. And she's going through it right now. She's on OnlyFans. I support her. She goes, do you want to watch me open a bag? And you go, does that cost extra?
That's what it's going to be. Yeah. They're going to like know what phone is nearby, know your preferences, and then put like the big titty lady or kid to walk by would be their favorite cartoon character or whatever selling you stuff. And then I still had to stick my hand into nothing so that it would close to go out and retrieve my third item. And I'm like making fun of this thing. And then there's a guy in this tech building that comes over and I'm like, oh, is it his or something? Like, he's taking this personally that I'm like mocking this thing.
I love that.
And he like opens up the thing up and gets me the chips and stuff. Like, it works perfectly as long as there's a human there. Like, it's like we're bringing back the like bellhop and elevators or something used to like,
I don't need that
button.
You can save that. You could cut that out. But they want it to like, it's almost like there's no practicality sometimes behind it, and that's what feels like you guys are spending your money. I remember when my mom would, you remember book fairs in elementary school? Where they'd be like, hey, we're going to have a book fair, so you can go down and buy a couple books. Or when Christmas was coming, I'm talking about when you're really little. Yeah. And they'd go, there's a store, so you can buy your family some Christmas gifts. And you'd be like, second grade. And you go down, you go, I get my mom this, I'm going to get my stepdad this. But I remember the first time doing that, of going in there and being like, well, I want that. I want that. I want that poster book. And you take that and you go, well, I want that too. And then you go back to class and you go, bought all this stuff for myself with my mom's money. I remember learning that lesson.
Yeah,
and my mom was like, you're supposed to buy stuff for other people. That's what it feels like tech's doing right now.
Oh,
where they go, I'm just doing this all for all shit I want. And you go, yeah, you're supposed to be doing this for the rest of us so that it's fucking, that it makes our lives. No,
they just think it's real neat that they have this AI vending machine.
Nah, man, AI vending machine. You go, that helps no one.
And it was, and then I do the show in there with like a bunch of people that were like in the tower and like co-work in it or whatever. And the tech guy like brings up the vending machine. I started making fun of it and they all fucking tightened up. These are the edgelords that think Elon Musk legalized comedy by the way.
Do you see what Elon did? He brought a sink into Twitter. And they're like, oh, total own. What a, you guys.
Total own.
The worst telling of a joke I've ever seen in my life was Elon Musk on Joe Rogan's podcast trying to tell a joke. And you're like, that's not a human being. Where he was like, this. Two economists, okay? And they're eating shit. And you like watch them tell this joke and you go, dude, I'll pay, give them all the money in the world to not tell a joke.
You could,
this guy sucks.
You could have 10,000 comedians that you're paying like $200,000 a year to just write material for you.
You have so much money, you don't have to, but that's what it is. It's a lot of these guys, it's like, that's what's funny about the microdosing thing where you talk about bros microdosing. You go, well, a lot of your shitty behavior is because you're insecure.
Yeah.
A lot of your shitty behavior is because you don't really know who you are and you have this like idea of what masculinity is and what you're supposed to follow. And if you do these drugs, you're supposed to get scared.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to have a moment of not repentance.
You're supposed to question the AI vending machine.
You're also supposed to go, why do I need this stuff?
Yeah.
Every successful mushroom trip I've ever had, there's been a moment where I've been like, yo! And then on the way down, I always, and I've used this analogy a ton, but I liken it to the thing at the carnival where you get in and they strap you in and there's two of you and they pull you down and then they shoot you up.
Yeah.
And that's what mushrooms is.
Yeah.
Where you go, holy shit, I'm so scared. And then you take a view and you go, look at the view.
Yeah.
And then you go, fuck, I'm scared a little bit. And then you go back up. And every time you go back down and go back up, you go, you enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Because you go, oh shit. I remember doing it at Coney Island in Brooklyn. And they pull you down. And I was going like, the first one, I was like, bah! And then the second one, you're like, oh shit, look, I think you can see Staten Island. And then you're like, oh fuck. And you're supposed to go back down to the ground and go, I learned something.
Yeah.
You're not
supposed
to take a little bit of mushrooms to remain a antagonistic dickhead.
It's just a bunch of control freaks with like, you know, addicted to placebos. Yeah. Like look at Brian Johnson, just sitting in the dark, like eating placebos all day.
I'm better drain my blood. You're like, dude, I get it if you're Keith Richards and you're trying to come off heroin and they go dump your blood for new blood. That way the hair, and you go, oh, maybe that makes sense. But like just sitting there taking little pills being like, am I younger? That just always to me screams mental instability or mental, like something's wrong.
And it's not even scientific. So they're just finding whatever scientist will validate what they want to believe.
It's like,
but you can cast a net wide and far, and you know, tobacco companies would do this to find like the scientist that would take enough money to be like, well, we don't fully know the thing. That's basically what these guys are doing now to have like a scientist that will tell them that they're going to live forever.
And a dumb person like me reads that a scientist is helping them, and I go, oh, well, there's a fucking scientist helping them. But it was. It really was like the tobacco companies finding them being like, it doesn't cause lung cancer, or they find a scientist that signs off on anything.
Yeah. That, I mean, you're always going to be able to find a disgruntled person or someone willing to take enough money for something. But
even the guy you were talking about that created in his own lab.
Alex Shulgin. Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Shulgin. He had to work for Dow.
Yeah.
He had to make something for Dow that Dow was like, yo, this is going to be a forever chemical that's in the water forever. And he was okay. And he like does it and he goes, can I have my own lab so me and my wife can have our experimental parties? Goes, yeah. But that's, that really is the unfortunate part of it, is a lot of times these like, these people who aren't using drugs for good reasons, they're using it for nefarious reasons, have the money. So then they get these people who do know the chemicals to go in, and you go, it's just, it's all fucked up. But the thing that always upset me about microdosing was it never seemed to take a lasting effect as a 3 gram dose would, or a Terrence McKenna dose of mushrooms.
Yeah, a large dose is an experiential change that you're having. So the chemicals go away, but it was those insights that you had during the experience. Whereas microdosing, like, what's the difference between that and just like taking an antidepressant or something? If you're taking it every other day anyway, and now your brain's going to acclimate anyhow. And
it's like, to me, it's the difference of like taking a cruise to visit places, or just going and living in a place.
Yeah.
Where you go, yeah, well, I went and lived in Barcelona, so now I call it Barcelona because I was there for too long. Versus like you take a cruise and you stop and you go, we were there for a day.
I wouldn't even say it's cruise level. Yeah. I'd say it's looking at a couple pictures and thinking that you know Barcelona now.
That's pretty fucking cool. Because yeah. I really do think the thing about psychedelics that I've always enjoyed, even if I don't enjoy it in the time, it humbles you.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you go, whoa, there's so much bigger shit than what we are.
Yeah.
And I think that is good for humanity to go like, holy shit, we're a tiny part of a big thing. Because a lot of what marketing now is, you're the only thing that matters. You're the only thing, you're living your experience, and you go, that's unfair to society.
Yeah, I'm pretty concerned about the human ego. So there's this study that's really stuck with me. It's called The Social Brain or something. But the idea is that our brain, the way our brains evolved, we were like never thinking alone, and so the brain was always like assessing what the brains in your tribe also knew. So you'd be like, you know, you might not know exactly how to build a shelter as well as this other person, but you have access to that information. And so then you're subconsciously, if you're around someone that has the expertise in that thing, you overestimate how much you know, because your brain conflates the ability to access information with already having it.
That's so very interesting to think like, oh, I've heard this guy talk about cars for 6 months in depth, I can fix cars.
And they test it. So like one of my favorite studies, they make up a thing. They and tell people, they go, we have this scientists discovered some mineral that glows. They've learned everything about it. How much do you know about how this mineral glows? And people are like, I think I have a handle on it.
And move back. I'll tell you how this motherfucker glows right now.
Which is related to this Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah.
Which is that basically when you know nothing about something is the most amount of confidence that you have, because life's just too full of information. So our brains just assume we know enough about whatever to get by in life. And then once you start learning, you go, oh shit, I don't know anything. And
that
then,
is why your first open mic you can kill and then spend the next 2 years eating shit. That's exactly what happened.
And it takes 20 years before you have the same level of confidence as you had at that first open mic.
And that's exactly
because you realize just how hard it actually is.
I remember doing a first open mic and being like, I got these 3 ideas and I'm gonna talk about them and make them funny, and I did. And then I was done and I was like, 3 minutes, and I went, damn, I think I know how to do stand-up. And then I spent after that, like bombing. I probably like legitimately bombing for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Just being like, I don't know. And then like learning like, oh, you got to learn how to write a joke. And then you got to write a joke that's true to you. And then you got to deliver it like you're not fucking saying something you wrote. And it is. And then 20 years later, you go, I think I got an idea. And then you go up there and it's funny and you go, fuck. Yeah, so it really is. It's like a long process.
Yeah, and everything's like that. So the experimental condition in this is that they said the exact same thing. They go, scientists have discovered this new mineral. It glows. It's confidential. How much do you know about it? And people are like, what do you mean? I don't know anything about it. It's confident. It's all the same information.
Really?
But because they said it was confidential, they're like, I don't know. Like, I can't access that information.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that our brains are conflating the ability to access knowledge with already having it. Yeah. So what does that mean when we have the internet in our pockets all of the time? We're all just going to walk around thinking we fucking know everything already.
I know that.
Because you can look it up. You mistake it for like having already looked it up and doing the research.
I'm wondering of what the imprint is of learning it and retaining it versus just the idea. Because I think just in what I've noticed since smartphones have came out is my ability to retain information is much lower than it was before when I had just had a flip phone and I'd read a book or I'd be on read a magazine on the subway and then I would like read an article and then I would just like know about this subject versus now I'm scrolling and I read four different things on Reddit in an hour and I got none of it. I got absolutely none of it. I got like little bits and pieces.
You can read like a mediocre book and be like, oh my God, I've just learned all of these things. And on like one subject that might take you a month to read or whatever. And meanwhile, you can scroll through Instagram and I'll feel like, oh, I saw this thing on, I saw a chart and I saw the, I just learned so much. And it's like, I didn't retain any of that at all.
It's like taking a cup to the ocean and you're just like trying to get a cup of water and it's just like splashing out to where every time you pull your cup, you're like, there's nothing in there versus like a sink where it's just dropping and you go, and I waited and now I got a full cup. It just feels like the overload of information washes everything out and you go, I can't fucking hold on to any of this shit.
Yeah.
That's why I'm one, like, it's interesting to watch your special again, watch Second Dose on YouTube. We'll put the link right here. But, it seems like from watching your first special, you're back to finding the enjoyment of writing jokes about stuff.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't feel as empty as that Comedy Central presents.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now, part of it too is that I always wanted to like get out of my comfort zone because I had such a narrow comfort zone when I started. When you speak about storytelling, I remember when I first, like I'm a storyteller now, when I first started telling stories, it was the scariest thing in the world. Yeah. The idea of like, well, this is a really good story if people are into it.
Yeah.
If they aren't, I'm bombing for 15 minutes. I was used to like, I can bomb on a joke. I have eight more. Then I just pull out my best joke after that. And
just
fully
reload
recover.
And shoot. Reload and shoot. And a story, you're right. Also, a lot of times with stories, you might forget a integral part that you don't realize the audience needs. So you're just telling a story and then they're just lost.
Yeah.
What's worse than bombing is having a crowd lost on a story where they're like, I don't even know where we're at right
now. Yeah.
That's what I learned by doing that story about getting robbed. Because I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm like, no, it's funny. I have change in my pockets. I'm like, I didn't explain the whole bank part. And then you're like, ah, fuck. And then you're lost.
Yeah.
So now with storytelling, you feel a lot more.
Yeah. And then trying to take, you know, like these studies that I can't stop from, like, I'll tell anyone that will listen. Yeah. Like, they just really interest me. And it's what I find myself thinking about. Going like, now, how do I make that funny though is really, really challenging. And so I like putting together I have a new show, Myth Understandings, that I'm putting together that's all about kind of human storytelling and why we evolved to create myths and how they were useful through time and how now that we have like more access to reality and information, the myths didn't go away necessarily and how it just kind of transitioned into disinformation and things. And so these are just the things that I just genuinely love talking about and thinking about and want to, you know, anyone that will listen when I'm at a party or whatever. And then just being like, but can I make that funny?
Yeah.
It's really challenging.
That's what I've always loved. It's very similar to Colin Quinn and what he does subject wise.
That's like probably the closest thing to what I'm trying to do right now.
Where he just goes, oh, the Constitution's interesting. Why don't I break it down with jokes for an hour?
Yeah.
I love that
shit.
That's
the sort of thing that
And
I'm
I think that's an
on.
Evolution for a comedian to hit that. I think when you hit that as a comic, you've stepped up from beyond the like, you ever have a doorknob jam and your dick's out? You know, like I do love those. I'm always going to love jokes, but I do like watching comedians that I like especially have that evolutionary jump where they go, well, now I have a whole subject and I break it down with like a ton of great jokes, and you're like, this fucking rules.
But now I'm like doing regular old, like if I had to do 5 minutes now, I'm like, oh my God, that's a little out of my comfort zone. Like I can get on stage for 90 minutes. Sure. No problem.
You're just
no
overcorrected. You want to do a full 24-hour set? You go, no one wants that. You go, I can do that. And I go, hey, listen, I need you to do a 6-minute guest set. And you go, I'm going to bleed out of my ears. I'm fucking scared. I'm so scared.
It's literally like that now.
That's fun though.
So I think that I'll probably do. I did like one weekend of regular stand-up last year, but now that the specials are out, I might do a little more stand-up.
Do it. Yeah. I think you just fuck around. Why not? Yeah. See what it's like. Come on back.
I still make some notes.
Fuck yeah.
I got some jokes.
You're always hilarious and one of my favorites to watch. Shane Moss's special, Second Dose, on YouTube, out now. Watch it. Follow him. Go to his website. See where he's performing. He does. If you enjoyed any of this conversation, he's so funny and intelligent, and just it's great to reconnect with him. Shane Moss, right there. Thank you for watching.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, dude.